Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
David Brophy, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Brendan. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Good.
So now for something entirely different. So you're a conductor, right? But
yes.
You're also someone who has vast experience in helping all kinds of people to find their voice. So we're in wedding season, gathering season. So what we're going to do today, you're going to give us some coaching on singing, and particularly on that most Irish thing, the party piece. Tell us about the tradition of the party piece.
Well, I suppose it draws on nostalgia, I'd say, first and foremost. And you say tradition, which is a key part of it. And like, I don't come from a singing family. My parents, there was no, we had family gatherings, obviously, but there was no such thing as, right, sing your party piece. So I've actually never heard my mother or father sing a song, a full song themselves, you know. So, but there are lots of families who, this is a really important thing, and it's handed down from generation to generation, and the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren, they start singing their songs when they're young. So I think it draws on tradition and nostalgia, but it's also, all singing is a form of bonding in some way. You know, if you even sing to one other person, it's a connection between both of you. And, you know, singing in general and music expresses things that can't be expressed in words. And so it draws on all those things, and particularly in social gatherings, and you mentioned weddings there, it's an extra special element to what should be a very special day for everybody gathered.
Yeah, so have people always historically been compelled to sing together? Yeah, it's something.
Yeah, there's a really, actually, towards. I'm just thinking of it now, there's a great book by an English researcher called Stephen Mythen called The Singing Neanderthals, and it traces the origins of music in pre-humanised, in Neanderthals.
Yeah.
And he talks about frequencies and how when we speak, you know, baby talk to a baby, like no one teaches to speak at a high pitch, but you don't go to a 6-month-old and go, hello, little cute baby. You kind of raise your voice.
Yeah.
Hello, hello, little baby. And you speak.
Well,
in
you might
baby
go up and
voice.
Down. You might go up and down.
Exactly. That type of thing. And that's the origins, because babies at that age, they find higher frequencies more comforting. And he believes that's the origins of singing in all pre-humanoids, and obviously extending it to humans. But I think obviously we live in an age with mobile phones and technology nowadays. Pre-that was times when there was no televisions and no radios. The only form of music making was live music making, and it was, you know, concerts did eventually come about. You know, music was generally situated in the church until maybe the middle of the 17th century, the 18th century, and then it became in proper concerts. But in local communities all over, not just in Ireland, but across the world, people sing to each other. And it's singing songs is an emotional connection, but also it's folklore. It's telling stories of what happened to your ancestors and your families prior to you. And so it's storytelling as well.
Yeah, so
and some of the great stories, some
on,
of the great, yeah.
yeah,
some of the great singing, I think, is also storytelling as well.
Yeah. There's something about, like you mentioned the wedding there, right? And there's phases of an evening, like, and there's phases of an evening in a house as well.
Yes.
There's a shift in the energy when people move from all the random chat and laughing and everything, and then music. And it's almost exemplified in that great Irish thing of shh.
Yeah.
But the energy does change then, doesn't it?
And I've seen it, like, as I say, I don't come from a family of traditionals, of people who sing at social gatherings, but I've been at plenty of social gatherings where singing takes place, and you do find, like, the first couple of songs, it's kind of hard necessary to own the room or to get that hush, as you say.
Okay.
But then somebody, like, maybe 3 or 4 songs in, actually sings something quite soft, and they just take an extra pause or two before they start singing, you know. And that's the extra couple of seconds that creates that atmosphere you talk about. And then people, you can kind of hear a pin drop. And I've been lucky enough, for example, to be in Curran's pub in Dingle and to hear the late, great Seamus Begley sing. And there's a big, you know, Kerry man, fantastic man. But to sing in a high lyric tenor voice that you mightn't necessarily expect when you see him, you kind of expect a big sound from him. And to hear him sing in Curran's and to hear a pin drop, you can hear nothing around him singing. It's a very, very special atmosphere. And that's what creates the atmosphere you talk about. It draws people in, and people kind of, just for 3 minutes while the song is taking place, they just lose themselves in the song and the person singing the song.
And it's one of two things, or both can happen as well, is that sometimes, say in that situation you're talking about, everyone goes into their own kind of little reveries as well, don't they? So in a way, people go into themselves, but then in a way, suddenly, as if by groupthink, they will join in at a point, maybe softly first, and then it becomes the communal, yeah?
It's such a powerful thing. Even listening to you describe it there, I can kind of feel that energy that you get. It's such a powerful thing. And I think at particularly at family gatherings where there's been a tradition of singing in generations, you'll kind of, somebody will listen to a song and go, I remember this is the one that Auntie Joan used to sing whenever we gathered on Christmas Day. So you get songs that are passed on through generations. And as I say, nostalgia and memories. And that's what, you know, every now and again you'll hear a sniffle and the odd tear drop down. That they're the special moments where people find an emotional connection that you just can't achieve any other way.
Yeah, God, it's
very special
stuff.
It's very special, yeah.
Singing together, singing alone too, but singing together is actually a very therapeutic thing, is it, for the body and the spirit and all that?
Yeah, years ago, this research wasn't done, but in the past kind of decade or two, you know, scientists have looked at what is the power of singing together. Now, if you sing on your own, your brain releases very good drugs into your body immediately. So oxytocin and endorphins are released into your bloodstream, and that, like, both of them make you feel, well, one makes you feel relaxed and the other makes you feel good about yourself. But in a group context, you know, if you sing a song at a family gathering or a wedding and let's say everyone joins in the chorus, and then you get a kind of, it turns into has its own energy where more and more people join the whole room singing relentlessly. After about 10 or 15 minutes, everyone's heartbeat starts to beat at roughly the same BPM, beats per minute.
Okay.
Within a window of about 10 BPM. And that is scientists now believe that's a very galvanizing force in terms of drawing people together and creating you know, an emotional connection, but also a kind of physiological connection that otherwise would not exist, because it makes sense, because you're all singing the same words and the same pitch and you're all breathing at the same time. Well, your bodies are going to start coalescing. And this is what the magic of any group singing or choirs, it doesn't matter what the environment is that it creates a, you know, physiological connection that's more than just an emotional connection.
So without getting too kind of woo-woo about it, right? Is there a sense then that you're transcending yourself? Or, like, you know the way sometimes if people have joined in the thing, it's like they're not singing the song. The song's going through them kind of almost. Or as Bono would say, the song is singing them.
Yes, that's a really key point, because if you think of like well-known songs that people might sing at a wedding, like you sing My Way, it's very hard to think, if you play the song My Way in your head or sing it to yourself in your head, it's very hard not to hear Frank Sinatra's voice. Because that's what we connect it with, you know. Yeah. And so the colour of his voice, like there's one of the greatest singers of the 20th century, how he sings, the tone he makes, how he turns the phrase. So even though you're listening to somebody else sing, you are channeling what's been in your head, the collective memory that you all share of that song, which is Frank Sinatra singing. And you, and that, as a result, that creates not only a connection with the person singing, but a memory of how you feel when you hear that song every single time, which could have been for the past 20 or 30 years.
Okay, right. Let's get practical now, right? So obviously singing solo at a party, very different singing at the safety of a choir. So bit of guidance. Do you need to be a good singer?
No. And I think, now you're asking me to jump into the realm of, you know, guesswork here, because we don't know at a wedding, like how many drinks people have had at a given time in the evening and potentially how rowdy the crowd or how welcoming the crowd might be to how you sing, you know. I think the first thing, like if you've done it for years, it's second nature to you, and you can see people when they get up and sing, how they own the space, they own the floor, they own themselves, they own the air around them, and they're really experienced, they've done it for a long time. But if you're new to it, you should think about, you know, this is something I really want to do. I've always wanted to sing a song for the family, or I was the one who read the poem, or who didn't, you know, kind of hid in the corner with a drink and kind of went to the loo when it came to my turn as it went around the line, you know. Well, if you think about you're going to embark on singing a song, think about what's the song you like listen to, what song you identify with. Is it the words? Is it the singer who sang it? Is it a particular time in your life when you heard the song and that had a connection with you? And try and pick a song that you connect with. I would also say, don't pick a song with a wide range and that loads of people know. So I would say don't pick My Way, because actually it starts quite low and at the end you've got that very, very high. I did it my way. And if you don't nail the end of it, people kind of go, oh, you know, Uncle John there, he didn't quite hit that end of that quite right, you know, like, and they'll give you a polite applause and you're quite exposed. Then I would also suggest pick a song that people kind of know the chorus of. So when you get the first verse out of the way and your heart is thumping at 160 beats per minute, if people join in the first chorus, that gives you a safety blanket and you kind of go, I'm not on my own now, and you can recover a bit, you know, because it is a daunting thing for many people to sing.
Yeah, and so people know as well, don't they? They know if someone wants them to join in, if they need that
and
support.
And if you just, as you've just done there, you just raise your hand and go, come on, sing along. Yeah. Everyone will sing along. They'll carry you through it, you know.
Okay. Do you need to know what key you're in? Do you need to practice, actually?
Well, I know I've been at parties before where, let's say, let's go back to My Way, I don't want to do My Way too much, but if you start too high and I can tell, oh, this is going to get very high because I know that the range of the song, and if they start too high and they get to the very end, I did it My Way at the very end, it's too high for them and they change key in the middle of it and everyone's singing along, you can kind of get in trouble. But like, there's a lot of songs that are in a kind of narrow range that are very simple. No, you shouldn't. You don't have to practice.
Like what kind of thing? How do people know?
I suppose like I was thinking of songs that have a narrow range. Like there's a on Johnny Cash's last album, he sang a Sting song, I Hung My Head. And the opening verse of it literally weaves around four or five notes in a very small range. It's all the same note over and over again. And it's really simple to sing.
Yeah. Johnny Cash is probably a safe space for people.
I would say. Johnny Cash. Or even like Christy Moore songs. People know Christy Moore songs. So if you don't know what you want to sing, maybe listen to some Johnny Cash or Christy Moore songs. And you'll say, oh, well, I know that song. And then if you know it, probably other people know it too. And they help you along.
And do you need to tailor the offering? Like if it's, you know, wedding, funeral, whatever?
I don't know is the short answer. And again, because as you say, weddings and funerals, like if you're at a wedding and you know that awkward moment after the ceremony has happened and you've got that big gap before the meal and you start drinking and you start meeting people, you know. So if you get to the party, even depends when the sing song happens and there's quite a lot of alcohol taken, you know. Yeah. Like, so
before there's any boy
And then so
you and kinda, once people have gone over that line, they never get back,
you know. Yeah. But I think, yeah, if you put some thought into it, like if you think of Christy Moore's The Voyage, I think that's a good wedding song because it's about two people starting out on a voyage together. They're going to set sail and at the end of the chorus, they say, now gathered around us, we have our own crew. The song goes like that, Johnny Doohan song. So maybe
We have a bit of The Voyage there.
Ah, yeah.
I am a sailor, you're my first mate. We signed on together, we coupled our fate. Hauled up our anchor, determined not to fail. For the heart's treasure, together we set sail.
You were saying there that the clarity.
His words, using the words determined not to fail, at the end of determined, it's really clear. And I think that clarity that Christy gives Johnny Doohan's song there is like, if you can give that to people around you, if you're singing it, that they people get that straight away. It's very vivid. So project.
Okay.
That's a key thing. Project.
Okay. Yeah, because a lot of people will feel like, when you said there about Seamus Begley, was it?
Seamus Begley, yeah.
This big man, and then comes out with, you know, that kind of falsetto kind of voice. You are making yourself quite vulnerable.
You're showing a side of you that people might not think is there. And as you say, vulnerability is part of it.
Yeah.
So you're kind of, you are slightly exposed, excuse me. You are a little bit exposed when you sing. But it's that, I suppose, vulnerability that people kind of, we're all vulnerable in our own way. So people kind of identify with that. And if you're in a family gathering, you kind of, I don't want to say test the family, but the family should support you. And they do, it's a reassuring blanket around you.
It can be nice to kind of bear the soul.
Yes,
a little
I think
bit,
so.
Maybe.
Yeah. And I think it's a galvanizing force of families. I've been at family gatherings where people sing together and you can feel the bond in the room after. I'm always obsessed with like, how does the room feel before a choir rehearsal starts?
Yeah.
And we get to 10 o'clock in the evening. How does it feel then? And the energy is completely different. Or the chat in the room at the coffee break. How does it feel? And then if you go to a wedding or a family gathering and you think about the first person sings the songs, just kind of lift your finger up and take the temperature of the room. And at the end, when like 20 people have sung songs, then feel the temperature in the room at the end and how the atmosphere in the room is different. It is completely different.
In what way?
There's a special bond. There people look at each other, I think, differently.
Wow.
There's an electricity in how they connect with each other because there's like there's an admiration you have for somebody who sang a song who didn't, you didn't think they could do it, or for somebody who didn't quite get nail the song but who went for it, or somebody who sang the same song at the previous 10 gatherings but has tried something new this time. And there's a glow and a happiness in the room.
Everyone's opened up to each other.
Everyone's opened up to each other.
Of course, there was a certain generation of Irish men, people would say, that never expressed anything. And then suddenly, in a gathering, you're nodding, they would suddenly show this kind of beautiful soul in the way they'd sing.
You talk about men because that resonates. I've luckily worked in Romania with a couple of male voice choirs. And in Romania, like the men, it's like if you sing... in a lot of Eastern European
it's
countries,
a
it's a sign of virility. It's a sign of your masculinity.
Oh, right. Okay,
and you're singing. Whereas here in Ireland, there will be a kind of a general saying that if you're a man and you're singing, and there's something quite not right about you, you know, unless you've got 10 points of Guinness inside you, you know. And so, but I think that's changing, and I think there's, you know, there are a lot more men who are kind of going, yeah, singing is part of what I want to do. And people want to express themselves. And they want to, you know, we're in a world surrounded by mobile phones and people want something real.
Yeah.
And live music making. You look at the phenomenon Taylor Swift and her current tour at the moment. And people are looking for that human connection, live experience. I mean, you can hear Taylor Swift songs on your phone, but it's somebody singing live in front of you. And all the little small blemishes in their voice and how they sing something, that's what makes it human, that's what makes it real, and that's what makes it authentic. And that authentic connection is what people are looking for in the sing-song.
Yeah, so do you have to keep your eyes open? A lot of people would favour, like, I close my eyes and I'm able to bare my soul here, but I can't look at anyone while I'm doing it.
If you think of the experience of what happens to you when you close your eyes, if I just sit here and close my eyes and I feel something different, I go into myself.
Yeah.
So if you're looking to express something that is from the heart, I think closing your eyes is a great help. And then some people feel very self-conscious when they're singing. So my job is, I don't see the audience all the time because I'm standing in front of a choir and orchestra, so everyone sees my back. So I don't have that issue. I don't have that looking at an audience. But if you're facing an audience, you're singing a song, I can see the benefits of closing your eyes and finding something inside yourself, a feeling inside yourself that you can hopefully then impart to the people listening.
Is it nice to have a David Brophy light in a gathering situation who will kind of, you know, manage along the situation and kind of an MC-ish kind of thing, and somebody who might encourage people who might be a bit shyer to sing and that kind of thing?
There's always a, as you say, a David Brophy light or a ringleader.
Yeah.
Who will kind of go like, oh, Maureen, you haven't sung now. Come on, it's your turn to go, you know. But I have luckily been at gatherings where that doesn't have to happen. And that's the magic, because I've been at gatherings where you get four or five songs in a row that segue into each other, that just keep going, and somebody picks up a song, somebody hears somebody sing a song and they reminds them, I'm going to sing this song, and they just start in straight away afterwards, and then you create a seamless 20 minute session, and that's where everyone holds their breath for 20 minutes. They go, wow, this is, it's like spinning plates, and the plates keep spinning, and it's like this has a magic. The evening takes on a magic then if you can get to that point. But if you get, sometimes I think I've been at gatherings where you've got the person cajoling everyone along to try and get them to sing, it can feel a little bit forced. So if you're comfortable singing directly after somebody else, do that, because it's a magical thing to happen, because it then creates an internal energy in the group, and that starts to circulate, and that's a very special thing.
Someone says, Mary, what about people who are tone deaf? I can't hold a tune or rhythm, but I love lyrics and singing them. What does he think of me singing? Should I just stay quiet?
I've spent my entire life encountering people who've told me they're tone deaf.
Yeah.
And I've said it doesn't exist. And I've never met anybody who, after 5 or 10 minutes, they can't get them to sing a tune. And I think, you know, I'd say to Mary as well, if she feels she's tone deaf, she's probably told she's tone deaf. Remember, we can't hear ourselves. If you ever hear your own voice on your answering machine, your voice message, you know, you hear yourself back.
Yeah.
And you kind of go, I can't believe I sound like that. So when I'm hearing myself now as I speak, I'm hearing a version of myself. But what people are listening on the radio is a different version of me. So Mary doesn't know how she sounds. But at some stage, probably when she was quite young in school, someone told her she was tone deaf and don't sing in the school choir and play the triangle out there at the Christmas nativity play.
Is there places for people like Mary? And I'd say there's a lot of people who used to sing when they were young and they're thinking now, geez, you know, I loved singing, but I don't do it anymore. Should they go to a choir? Are there singing teachers anymore?
Yes. You Google singing teachers. There are singing teachers all over the country. And
they take on people,
I would say I wouldn't go straight to a singing teacher. I would say join your local choir, get used to using your voice, get used to breathing.
Are choirs a fairly welcoming place?
I've never come across a choir that's not a welcoming place.
Yeah.
And you do have factions within the choir.
Really?
Yeah, because the altos stick together, you know what I mean?
Okay, yeah.
And the tenors, you know, the tenors kind of end up, I think a lot of choirs I've worked in, they get the butt of the jokes from the altos and sopranos, you know? So they have to stick together, the lads do. And the lads kind of feel, yeah, it's the energies within choir and choirs and groups and choirs. But you can go into any choir in the country and I think feel welcome. And you'll find your place in the choir. Oh, God's creatures got a place in the choir.
Yeah.
Something.
And will the person who's in charge of the choir or whatever, yeah, they'll have a listen to you and
they
say,
have a listen generally. Yeah, and, you know, I've worked with choirs where you go in and say, sing a scale. And people go, oh, God, I'm so embarrassed. Just start singing, you know. And if it comes out the wrong way, we can fix it, you know. So
okay.
I would say I don't believe in tone deafness. And you might not be able to sing perfectly in tune, but practice is a great thing. And the best place to practice is with a choir. And then maybe after a year in the choir and you've found a bit of confidence with yourself and you've galvanised with the group then maybe say, I'd love to go and get some lessons, one-to-one lessons.
Listen to this. My father was very shy and couldn't hold a note, but he sang with a strange passion. He also sang to himself while having a nap or half asleep. Lovely memory. But isn't that remarkable?
I was in town, I was in the city centre yesterday and this woman was walking kind of behind me and she was singing to herself. And I was going, it's not a lovely thing. She's walking along singing to herself and you rarely hear that. But I'm delighted to hear that listener has that memory of their father who potentially felt they couldn't sing but did sing with a passion. So always remember that. How you put the song across is not necessarily whether the notes are in tune or you remember all the words perfectly, but how you deliver it goes back to what I said about Christy Moore's, his diction is so clear. That clarity of delivery is important.
Okay. Older people in the family who often maybe aren't as communicative or whatever as they are anymore, they can then get into a song and somehow, like, they're all there, yeah?
There's something about music and memory, which is, we know with people who've got various types of motor neuron disease later in life, that they've got Parkinson's or Alzheimer's disease, that when they sing a song, they can't remember what happened half an hour ago, but they can remember all the words of a song they sang when they were a child.
Yeah.
And we know that if, you know, language development in old age is very good for your brain and you can develop, you know, new synaptic channels in your brain and new ways for your brain to function as you get older by learning language. So if music's a language, which I believe it is, it's a way of communicating, well, then that's probably one of the most powerful tools in order for older people.
But you're also kind of saying it's a shortcut into our subconscious, our folk memories, our collective memories and all that. So it's a way of getting into a level of the brain we're not in day to day when we're talking.
It's brain to heart and it's cognitive brain to feeling, heart. I think, you know, which I think is really important. I think it's very important.
What's your party piece?
I've had a few. I actually do sing every now and again. I Hung My Head, that Johnny Cash song, which was originally a Sting song. And probably because when I first heard the song, it was, I think it was on Sting's album, Fields of Dreams. It was in a really weird time signature. And Johnny Cash took it in that amazing album he recorded just before he died. And he turned it into what seemed like, you know, a 200-year-old country song.
Yeah.
So I've sung that before. And I've sung The Voyage, Christy Moore, before.
Someone here, I have a bad stutter, but I'm a great public singer.
There you
go.
That's
more of it, isn't it?
That's to do with breath. Because anything stammering or stuttering is people who possibly get their breath a little bit too high in their bodies. And when you sing, you've got to breathe a bit deeper and lower. And that's so,
okay.
That's an interesting one as well.
So look, I think Give It A Go is what you're saying. But quickly before you go, what is the WDR Funkhouse Orchestra?
The WDR Funkhouse Orchestra are an orchestra based in Cologne. WDR stands for Westdeutsche Rundfunks. And I have recently taken up a position. Later this year, as chief conductor there in Cologne.
Okay, but it's not like a Funkhouse orchestra.
Yeah, it's people have kind of said, like, what a great name for an orchestra.
Get
like,
down.
Funkhouse orchestra, get down, boys, you know? Like, and no, Funk is German for, I think, signal or like Funk, like television signal or something like that. So Funkhouse orchestra would mean Broadcasting House Orchestra. And
okay.
They're a fantastic bunch of people and I'm very excited about
you might bring a bit of funk to them.
Yeah, they might bring a bit of funk to me too.
The Irish funk.
Yeah, yeah.
David Brophy, thank you very much
for
that. That was the perfect bam after that. Scratchy or
earlier.
We'll take a break.
Thank you.
Email brendan@rte.ie.